And we will also be live on Facebook. And we will get started here in one moment, just to make sure all the technical details are set to go. And welcome everybody.
Hey, Alan, I have an update for you.
Mm-hmm.
Gretchen Reinemeyer is going to join us from the Arlington Board of Elections in lieu of Eric Olson, the assistant, director at anyway, she's going to be here in person, the director of elections for us.
Oh, excellent.
Yeah. I was just looking through. I haven't seen whether she's logged in or not, but I'll look for her name.
Okay. Yeah. Because we'll be getting started here in 1 second.
Yeah.
I'm here.
Excellent. Great. Glad to hear you.
Okay. Let me just make sure I have everything running correctly on my side, and then we will get started. That's running correctly. Just so everybody knows, we are live on Facebook and we have a recording going on. We'll go ahead and get started. Okay, so welcome everybody to our September membership meeting for the kickoff of the 2019 Arlington County Civic Federation year. This is our 105th year. It's hard to believe, but here we are. And I'm very excited. We have a really packed program this evening. We have candidates night. We will have candidates from the United States Senate, the United States House of Representatives, the County Board, and the School Board in ascending order of importance, of course. We will also have an introduction by our Arlington County Director of Elections. Then we have a couple of resolutions to discuss as well. And we also have a new member who has applied to join, and we'll have a vote on that as well at the end of the evening. Okay? So here is our agenda for the evening. So we'll start off, we will have our pledge. The minutes have been posted to they went out in the newsletter. And at the end of the evening, we're going to send out two electronic ballots to the email addresses of the folks who have registered, who are delegates or designated alternates. And the ballots will be for two things. One of them is to approve the minutes from the June membership meeting, which were, again, posted in the last newsletter as well as on our website. And then also to approve the new organization that is joining today, which is the local chapter of the NAACP, and we'll talk a little bit more about that later. So the first thing we're going to do is we're going to have the Pledge of Allegiance. So if you would please join me and stand. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, indivisible, under God, with liberty and justice for all. Thank you. All right. So our next board meeting will be coming up on Sunday, September 20th via Zoom. We do that once a month, and all are welcome. You will all, the information about that will be posted online as well. And again, tonight is our candidates forum. We have a packed slate of candidates tonight, the Senate, the House, County Board, and School Board. Everybody who was identified on the local ballot received invitations, and then questions were submitted in advance that I will be asking later on from all the committees as well as member organizations. And so we will be doing that after we start off with a brief introduction from our Arlington County Director of Elections. And if I can stop sharing here, I can find her. Would you mind speaking up?
Hi, this is Gretchen.
There we are, okay. All right, please go ahead.
I just want to start by thanking you so much for inviting us. We're happy to be here tonight to speak to this venue. So my name is Gretchen Reinemeyer, and I am the Director of Elections for Arlington County. And for those of you who have been following election laws this year, it's been a pretty bit of a wild ride, I would say. So there's a lot of new things that have been introduced this year. But I think the most important thing to emphasize is all of the old things that were in place last year are still in place this year. We're just expanding opportunities and expanding options for voters. So some of the new laws that were introduced is they've expanded the list of ID requirements that are accepted at the polling location. So you no longer need a photo on that ID. We've shifted some deadlines around when you go to request a ballot or return a mail ballot. And there are some new procedures when you go to mainly in vote by mail if you're requesting a mail ballot or if you're voting early before election day. So the main difference is that you no longer need a valid reason to vote before election day. Any Arlington voter can choose to vote either by mail or early in person before election day. So a couple of the key deadlines is if you have moved or you know somebody who has moved or changed their name, they should update their voter registration and they have until October 13th to do this. This is a Tuesday. The other important deadline is if anybody wants to request a mail ballot for this election, they have until Friday, October 23rd to request that mail ballot. In terms of options about how to vote this year, there are three options for voters in Arlington County. The first is they can choose to vote by mail, so they have to request their mail ballot. We will start mailing ballots starting next weekend. So anybody who has put in a request up to this point, your ballot will go in the mail by Saturday, September 19th. When you go to return that ballot, you can do so either in person or in the mail. We do provide prepaid postage for all return ballots. We will be adding some in-person drop locations as well. And we hope to expand those options additionally by the end of this week. There's just a new bill passed on Friday. So we're trying to get some more drop locations added for you guys. In terms of voting in person, if you wanted to vote in person, you can do so starting Friday, September 18th at Bozeman Government Center. We're in a new location. We're not going to be in the main building, but we're in the building next door this year at 2200 Clarendon Boulevard. We were able to secure a lease on a larger space to help with social distancing. So it's right next where the Starbucks is or the former Wells Fargo space, if you're familiar with the area. And then starting October 17th, all the way to October 31st, we will be adding four additional locations around Arlington County. Those locations are Madison Community Center, Langston Brown Senior Center, Walter Reed Community Center, and Aurora Hills Library Senior Center. In addition to voting either by mail or early in person on before election, all of your neighborhood polling locations will also be open on election day from 6 a.m. to 7 p.m. So if you're comfortable voting one way, that option will still be open to you this year. In terms of what is on the ballot, it's nice to see that we have good representation from the candidates on the ballot who will be speaking later today. I also like to emphasize that we do have two constitutional amendments this year, as well as five bond questions on the ballot. So with that, I see some questions have come in over on the chat. Would you like me to answer those now, Alan?
Please, just take a couple really quickly. Yeah.
So the first question is from Bill about when are mail ballots counted? So in Arlington County, we start what is something called pre-processing. So we'll start checking in ballots prior to election day and running them through a scanner. We don't actually tabulate any votes until 7 p.m. election night, but we will start processing your mail ballots prior to election day. And one of the new bills that was passed late Friday, signed by the governor, was that if we notice there's a problem with your mail ballot that would prevent us from counting it the way you intended it, We are required to notify the voter to let them know that their ballot might be denied and to give them the opportunity to correct whatever deficiency they had on that envelope that would require their ballot to be denied. So that's an exciting thing that we're happy to offer. And then from Lois, it's asking, do we know what the locations would be? I feel like I answered that. Okay, excellent. So on our website, if you go to like, we will be adding drop locations. We're still in the process of nailing down those final locations where you can drop a mail ballot. Then from Lisa, we have a question about, do we need poll workers and how people volunteer? So Arlington County has really stepped up in a way I have never seen Arlington County step up. We have received so many applications for poll workers in the last month, and that we should be okay if they all follow through. I'm not sure how many of them realize they have to be to work at 5 a.m. on election day, but hopefully we're in a really good place for staffing. We've had a tremendous response for our community, and we cannot ask for better support. And then from Bernie, there's one more question. Will the election board count ballots that lack a postmark? Yes, so ballots have until Friday after the election to be returned to our office. And any ballot that does not have a postmark, but is returned via the mail to our office by Friday at noon, will be counted. And then one more question from Bill. About, can I drop off my mail ballot at one of the designated locations or do I have to mail it? So Bill, this is one of those laws that was signed late Friday, right before the weekend. So you will be, all polling locations on election day will be drop locations. So if you request a mail ballot, you can drop it at your polling location on election day. All early voting sites will also be drop locations. And hopefully by the end of this week, we'll be able to offer some more 24-hour drop boxes throughout the county. So does that answer? Are there any additional questions?
Doesn't look like it. And then I think we probably want to move on at this point. So thank you so much, Ms. Reinemeyer. We really appreciate you joining us personally this evening.
Yes, thank you.
So much, absolutely. And it looks like we have a note from the legislation committee. They've prepared a special report on voting. There's a link in the chat to that as well. And we'll make that information available also after the meeting. Okay. So going to go ahead and proceed with candidates night. And our first candidate is Mr. Daniel Gade, who is a candidate for the United States Senate. So I'm going to stop the share here for a moment. And then the way this is going to work is Mr. Gade will have a 1 minute opening statement. He will have six questions that I will ask him, each one of which will have a 1 minute response time and then a 1 minute closing statement as well. Okay. So Lois, are you ready?
I am ready. I have my phone here ready to give us a timer for a minute. So whenever you start, I'll start the timer.
Okay. So Mr. Gade, if you'd care to start your opening statement.
Well, good evening, friends. It's a pleasure to be on with you tonight. And I am Daniel Gade, and I'm the Republican nominee for United States Senate. And the road that has gotten me here has had a number of twists and turns, but the bottom line is I've always been a servant of the Constitution. I've been a servant of my fellow citizen, even at the risk of my own life. And in fact, lost a leg in combat in 2005 due to my willingness to risk for my fellow citizens. And so nothing they can do to me in politics scares me, but this is my first run for public office. I am not a career politician. I don't even consider myself a politician. As a matter of fact, I just consider myself to be a career servant. After I was wounded, I had to recreate myself. And so I got a master's degree and a PhD in public policy. I worked under two different presidents in policymaking positions and served on the National Council on Disability for 5 years. And now currently I'm a professor at American University in DC. So I live in the far, far away land of Fairfax County, right by Mount Vernon.
Perfect.
Thank you so much. Okay. Our first question, and Lois, after I finish reading the question, then please set up the timer and Mr. Gade, you can answer, okay?
Sure thing.
First question is, what has been the biggest challenge that you've devoted more time and energy to than anything else?
I'm sorry, in the election or in what general, regard? What are we talking about?
In general. Your biggest challenge in life?
What an interesting question. I don't know what direction to take that. So here's what I would say is that throughout my life, there have been lots of opportunities to make the hard right choice or make the easy wrong choice. And no matter which direction I go, or no matter what choice I'm faced with, I always try to be the sort of person who chooses the hard right over the easy wrong. And in politics, there are way too many easy wrongs. There's a lot of, there's people who pander, there's people who tell different constituencies what they want to hear just to tickle their ears. But I'm the sort of person who will always tell you the truth because I've been raised and cultured as an army officer and now as a public servant to always tell the truth. And so I think that continual challenge to be a truth teller has been one that I've relished and one that I'm proud to offer to take to the United States Senate.
Thank you, sir. Okay, question number two. What are the most important challenges facing our country and how do you propose to address them? Are there opportunities for Democrats and Republicans to find common ground on these issues?
Yeah, absolutely. There are always opportunities for Republicans and Democrats to work together. As a matter of fact, throughout my life, I've always worked with people of all different races, both sexes, all different political persuasions. And as long as we're all focused on serving each other and serving the Constitution, I think we're going to be okay. And so our biggest challenges right now are clearly, I wouldn't have said a year ago, who would have known, but I would obviously COVID and COVID recovery are most important. But I think in the recovery, there are a couple of really great opportunities to take a look at our education system, to take a look at our healthcare system, and do those things in a way that allows us to emerge stronger after COVID than before we went in. Of course, it's been a terrible tragedy. A lot of people are suffering, but I think there are ways to work together to make this, to make Virginia better and to make the United States better coming out of it.
Great. Thank you so much. Okay, our third question. What measures do you support to improve and secure elections and voting in our country?
Yeah, so when I was serving in combat in November 2004, it was the Bush-Kerry election for president, and then, of course, everybody else. And I was voting absentee from Ramadi, Iraq, a terribly dangerous place. And actually, a couple days later was the first time I was wounded in combat. So I, as a soldier fighting for that right to vote, I was proud to cast my ballot absentee. And so I think that what we need to do is we need to have ways for people to count to cast their ballot in a way that is absentee if necessary, in person if necessary, whatever the person wants to do, but that is safe and secure. Now, I think we ought to be very careful to ensure that not only is every American given a chance to vote, provided that they're legally allowed to vote and so forth, but also that we're securing our elections so that only Americans are allowed to vote and people are only allowed to vote one time. So we need to be very, very careful about that because the right to vote is probably the most sacred right that we have as citizens. I mean, it underpins all the other rights that we have. So I'm a proponent of election security for sure.
So, whoops, I can't stop it. There we go. Sorry, that's my fancy little timer.
Okay, that'll be obvious when I run out of time, Lois. Thank you.
Okay. The fourth question is, do you support removing the ratification deadline for the Equal Rights Amendment? Why or why not?
No, I don't support removing the ratification deadline because what we have to do is we have to abide by the Constitution and abide by the way that law was created, put a deadline on it. And in the event, it turns out that's not enough states ratified it in time to make it a constitutional amendment. So what we ought to do, If people are desirous of that being an amendment added to the Constitution, then it's unfortunately for the people who want that, we're going to have to restart the process. And that means starting in the House and going to the Senate and ultimately sending it out to the states for ratification. Because what we can't do is pretend that the United States in 2020 is the same as the United States in, correct me if I'm wrong, 1973, I think is when the ERA was put in. It's not the same place. We've come a long way in addressing workforce challenges for women. We've come a long way in addressing unequal representation and all of those issues. We have a long way to go in some areas, for sure. But changing the way the law was done and in a way that sort of reflects 2020 sensibilities backwards is an inappropriate response because it devalues the actual process.
Thank you. Okay, this is the last question. It's a little bit long. NEA.
I'm ready. Tanned, rested, and ready, Alan. Hit me.
All righty. Excellent. NEA funding has been steadily and consistently bipartisan over the last three funding cycles, despite the current administration's call for termination. As this impacts Arlington's large and small cultural organizations like WETA, PBS, and the Signature Theater, please tell us your position on the future of the National Endowment for the Arts, our nation's only arts funder supporting art in all 50 states, the District of Columbia, and all U.S. territories.
Yeah, listen, I love art. I think that we have there's important cultural ramifications to having a thriving art scene, if you will. I think we ought to be finding ways to make sure our museums and our ways of displaying and celebrating art across cultures, across parts of our culture. I think that's all very, very valuable. But remember, I told you at the beginning that I'm going to be the sort of person who always tells you the truth. And I think right now what we have is a government that is spending far, far too much money on things that are not explicitly authorized in the Constitution. Now, if we had a budget surplus, great. Let's consider whether or not it's appropriate to put money to that private purpose, ultimately, instead of it being government funded, right? So I think ultimately what we have to do is make spending choices and priorities. And right now our Senate and our House have done a terrible job of prioritizing spending. We should only spend what we take in. We should have a balanced budget amendment. We should spend within our means, and then we can make decisions about funding less mission critical things like the NEA. There are a lot of things that are higher priority to me than that.
Thank you. All right, that is the last of our questions for you this evening. And then we are now ready for your closing statement. And again, this will be for 1 minute.
All right. Well, sure. I'm really proud to be here with you tonight. I was asked by somebody earlier today, I think it was on Facebook, that, oh gosh, you're going into Arlington. Isn't that a blue area? And I said, look, you know, I've done hard things before. I've been in combat. I've been in Ramadi, Iraq during the height of the insurgency there. And there's nothing I'm afraid of because look, at the end of the day, an election is just a job application. That's all it is. There's nothing fancy about the Senate. There's nothing more important than any other public servant who's presenting to you tonight. And so I decided to come right into the lines then, into Arlington, the bluest county in Virginia. And the reason is because I'm trying to represent all Virginians, not just red ones, not just purple ones, but all Virginians. And so if you're out there and you're skeptical of Republicans, I'm not the kind who's going to be afraid to tell you the truth as I see it. And I'm going to try to represent all Virginians in the United States Senate.
Thank you very much, Mr. Gade. And we appreciate you coming out. And I know you've got a little bit of time left, but.
Alan, I'm a college professor actually, and I have to teach a class tonight. So I'm going to harvest back all 37 minutes of my time to drink some water and get ready to be an excellent college professor tonight as I teach my class. So thanks so much, everybody, for allowing me on. Please feel free to email my campaign. I got a guy, Kent at Gade for Virginia. If you want to get a message to me, you can email Kent. That's fine. Please don't spam him. Don't sign him up for, you know, any kind of things he doesn't want to be on. But I'd love to answer any questions, and I'd love to come see anybody who wants to see me. I'll come to any organization who wants to see me. I will absolutely present to them. I'm not afraid to do that. I'm thrilled to do it, as a matter of fact. I fought for you. I'm happy to talk to you.
Mr. Gade, if you're in front of the chat, if you wouldn't mind entering that email address into the chat, and then everybody can see it.
Yep, I'll do it right now. Thank you so much.
All right, Alan. Wonderful. Thank you so much. All right, thank you, Mr. Gade. And we will now transition to our county board candidates, Ms. Libby Garvey and Ms. Audrey Clement. So what I'm going to do tonight is, all right, bear with me. Any windows open. Okay. So we need to have an order of speaking tonight, and what we're going to do, the same thing we've done in the past, and I'm going to use a random number generator from Google to generate a random number. And I'm going to have the two candidates pick be assigned based on that. And I'm going to assign these numbers in order of last name. So since Ms. Clement's last name starts with C, which comes before G, I'm going to go ahead and pull up the random number generator. Okay, so I'm now generating a random number between 1 and 2 from Ms. Clement. If she gets the number 1, she'll be our first speaker. If she gets the number 2, she'll be our second speaker. Okay, so I'm now, before I do that, let me just reload this page. Okay. Between the min and the max of 2 and generate. Okay. So Ms. Clement, you will be our first speaker tonight. And then what we will do is you'll have the first opening statement, and then we'll go through the questions and you guys will alternate who answers the question first. And then at the end of the night, Ms. Garvey will give the closing statement first. Okay. Let me stop sharing here. And then, let's see, Audrey, there you are. Okay, so I'm going to spotlight your video. Let me make sure I have, let's see, okay. So Lois, are you ready?
I am ready. Could everybody hear that alarm? We should have run a test. I trust that that was clearly audible.
Yeah, we can hear, I can hear it.
Okay, great, I'm all set then.
Okay, so we'll have a 1 minute opening statement. By Ms. Clement and then by Ms. Garvey. So go ahead, Ms. Clement, when you're ready.
I'm Audrey Clement, the independent candidate for County Board. As a 16-year Westover resident and civic activist who serves on the Transportation Commission, I'm running because Arlington deserves better. My opponent, incumbent Libby Garvey, has promoted harmful policies resulting in overcrowded schools, gentrification, and an effective tax rate twice the rate of inflation. Now she is pushing missing middle upzoning, which will inflate land values and tax assessments, displace residents, and build unaffordable housing. Her response to COVID-19 also falls short. Too little funding to stop evictions, no guaranteed childcare for essential workers, an ordinance that bans congregating near hotspots that was adopted with no public input. If elected, I will act sensibly to curtail COVID, oppose upzoning, say yes to real social justice reforms, and no to symbolic gestures. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, and now Ms. Garvey.
Yeah, thank you. So public service has been my life's work. My focus has always been on making the world a better place for everyone. I've been a Peace Corps volunteer, a PTA volunteer. I served 15 years on the school board and 8 now on the county board. My husband and I raised 2 children here. I now have grandchildren growing up in Arlington too. I've seen a lot of changes and I know this community well. In fact, I've helped make Arlington what it is today, but I am always learning, which is one of the things I love about my job. You know, as incoming chair in January, I didn't know how challenging this year would be, but I said then that I thought a focus on equity, innovation, and resilience would help guide us through 2020, and it is. These challenging times are bringing exciting opportunities for our future if we focus on equity to make sure that everyone can do well, on resilience for the long run, and if we're not afraid to adopt innovative solutions that work, because many of the old solutions are not working. So I look forward to your questions tonight and thank the CivFed for holding this event.
Thank you, Ms. Garvey. Okay. First question this evening, and we'll start with Ms. Clement. What has been the biggest challenge that you've devoted more time and energy to than anything else?
Well, that's actually, there's 2 answers to that question. In my lifetime, the greatest effort that I ever devoted to anything was to getting my PhD in political science, and that occurred in 1993. But in recent years, and I would say over the course of the last 10 years, I have devoted the most effort and found the most challenge in public speaking, particularly at county board meetings, attempting to persuade the voters that my position is correct. And that's been a real hard ask of the voters because I often take positions that are not in conformity with the mainstream.
Thank you.
Same question, right?
Yes.
Yeah, no, thank you. So I'm going to do two answers too. I think probably the greatest amount of time and effort actually was in raising my children. But as a public official, I think it's got to be the streetcar. When I got on the county board, I had to learn a lot about the whole issue. I ended up being the only one on a board of five. I was the only one who realized that this was not a good idea. I had to get an independent elected to the board to help support me. I got kicked out of the local Democratic Party because of that. It was a tremendous effort. And at the beginning, everybody said, you can't stop the streetcar. It's a done deal. You can't get somebody who's not a Democrat elected. That's impossible in Arlington. We did all of it. We accomplished all of it. And Arlington is in a much better place now that it does not have that streetcar. So it's sort of a negative thing. But I'm really proud of what I did there. The effort was pretty large, and I'm still paying the price for it, but it's well worth it because we're a stronger county now that we're moving forward in a different direction, which we need to do.
Thank you very much. Okay, our next question, and Ms. Garvey, you will answer this one first.
Okay.
There are trade-offs during any budget process, and COVID-19 is only increasing pressure on our county's resources. Please indicate what county services or programs represent your top two priorities for the coming year and explain why.
So moving forward, I think my top priorities have to deal with food, shelter, and health. So I will do whatever we need to make sure that we do not have hundreds or more people out on the street because they can't be in their houses because they can't pay rent. That would be a catastrophe for us. We got to make sure that everybody's got enough to eat. That is a major issue. And working hard to make sure that we get good testing in place so that we can really deal with this pandemic. So I think all of those things, basically the basic necessities for this year, are going to be my main focus moving forward.
Thank you. Ms. Clement, would you like me to repeat the question?
No, that's fine. So yes, my principal priority, if elected this year, would be to respond adequately and sensibly to the COVID crisis. I think that the pandemic is our first order of business. And I also did some reflecting on that today, and I realized that even if a vaccine were marketed by January 1st of 2021, it would probably be a full year before 60% of the U.S. population were actually inoculated. And that 60% represents the number of people who have to get inoculated in order to produce something called herd immunity. So this crisis is going to be with us for at least another full year. And I'm sure most people don't want to hear that. But on the other hand, they do want to hear that county board members are on top of the situation. Now, I am critical of the current county board for two things. Number one, for most of this year, or at least in the last 6 months, county board members denied that they had any special authority under Virginia law to do anything differently than follow the directions as outlined by the governor. Now, I'm not totally critical of what the governor has done. I think he has done better than many governors. Certainly, he has done better than governors throughout the rest of the South. But there are actions that county board could have taken under Title 44 of Virginia statute that accords them special emergency authority when a public emergency has been declared. And indeed, a public emergency was declared by the county manager on March 13th. So I was in a running battle earlier this year with county board about its authority under that statute, which is Title 44. Now, recently—
We are about out of time for your question or answer, Ms. Clement. Can you have one or two more words to say, or?
Yes, I am critical though of the actions the county took most recently to ban congregating on sidewalks.
Okay, thank you so much. All righty. So our next question, and this is going to go to you first also, Ms. Clement. What creative solutions can you suggest to resolve a lack of affordable childcare and quality pre-K programs? What regulatory and financial roadblocks can you help remove?
Well, actually that issue is relevant to the pandemic, because I understand that inadequate or maybe no provision has been made to provide childcare for essential workers. And I think that is our first order of business. Now, in addition to, of course, providing rent relief, which the county has done, I understand the county has set aside $10 million for business relief and for rent relief, but I'm not aware of any program to provide support, child support for essential workers. Now, this, of course, has a lot of health and public health ramifications, as well as personal ramifications for the affected individuals. I understand that the schools, I am happy that the schools are operating in virtual mode, but what that means is that children whose parents have to work are going to be sitting at home unattended. And I was told, for example, that it, at this stage of the game—
You're out of time. Ms. Garvey.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, so childcare is one of the major issues that we face as a society even before COVID hit. Everybody's discovering that good quality childcare is actually essential to the economy. And I've actually kind of, in some ways, it's been good to watch men deal with this issue, because it's so often fallen on women and on younger parents. So we are working with the school system. We're working on opening Madison and Farrellington possibly as childcare centers for the children of people who absolutely have got to go to work and probably can't afford childcare and otherwise would leave their children home alone. We're trying to work with the school system to identify those families and those parents who need it most, and trying to find a way to do it. We're getting those centers ready so that they meet the specifications to be a childcare center. Moving forward, there's zoning issues, and we've worked on that that can maybe make it a little bit easier. We're trying really hard, but you've got to have safe conditions. It all comes down actually to money. And as a society in general, the rest of the developed world has figured this out a whole lot better than we have. We don't pay childcare workers enough, and we don't do enough to support it as a society, because we have always thrown it back on individual families to deal with, and COVID is making so clear how bad a policy that is in general. So moving forward, we're looking at doing some buildings here, and I am planning to work quite hard with our business community. I think we may have space in commercial buildings and office buildings, and many of those workers can use childcare. So I'd be working on that too. Sorry.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Okay, the next question is actually for you as well, since we're alternating.
Yeah.
Okay. What is your philosophy on housing? Do you believe that affordable housing opportunities should be distributed more equitably across the county rather than being concentrated in limited neighborhoods? And if so, what are your recommendations for getting that done?
And we are working on doing that. Yes, we do want it throughout the county. You don't want it just concentrated in one space. One of the things that we worked on actually were the accessory dwelling units and making it easier for people to rent out rooms in their homes and not actually expand the footprint, but have a little more flexibility in being able to have somebody share their house with them. So that is very important to do. This is again an issue where as a society we've been really bad. Much of the world views housing as a right. We haven't done that. It continues to be a major issue. I'm working a lot on trying to bring housing online, which just helps somewhat bring the cost down. Looking at doing it in maybe some of those office buildings. Again, we have in the past, there was an office building that was converted to housing, and our housing people are looking at that now, which may be an outgrowth of this pandemic. If there's a lot less office space needed, that would free up some space for doing housing. So I believe that we ought to be doing a whole lot more to support housing. It's very difficult in the kind of culture and economic system we've got and what is sort of the American way. But I think we are looking at different ways of doing that and really a greater role of government. But we've got to figure out a way to do it that doesn't, of course, make it all fall back on taxpayers. And again, I think the business community should help.
Thank you, Ms. Garvey. Mm-hmm. Okay. Ms. Clement?
Yes, I certainly support a more equitable distribution of affordable housing in the county. But I assure you that the plan being promoted by the county right now, known as Missing Middle, is a myth. It, based on the assumption that densifying Arlington's residential neighborhoods through upzoning will provide more affordable housing. It will not. The myth of the missing middle was challenged by a July 2020 report by Wharton professor John Huntley, who demonstrated that Arlington property values are already so high that duplex ownership will remain beyond the reach of even those households earning 100% of area median income. Instead, missing middle densification, instead of this, I propose to restore and promote the tax incentive for renovation of privately owned apartment buildings that the county eliminated in this year's budget. Not only will this bring a lot of dilapidated buildings up to code, it will do so at a price that is affordable to both landlords and moderate income tenants. And I would also add to that.
I'm sorry, Ms. Clement, you're out of time for that answer. Our next question is also going to you, Ms. Clement.
Yes.
If elected, what policies, if any, will you pursue to reform the county's policing and criminal justice systems?
Well, I think that's an excellent question, and it was recently answered by my own delegate, Delegate Patrick Hope, who sponsored legislation in the General Assembly that will do the following. It will create civilian review boards across the Commonwealth. It will ban military-style equipment for use by local police. It will prevent law enforcement officers terminated for misconduct from jumping from job to job. And it will codify best practices in doing background checks on prospective law enforcement personnel. It will end qualified immunity for law enforcement people who are alleged to have committed crimes. And it will ban the use of chokeholds and ban no-knock search warrants. If any or all of these reforms are implemented, I think we will see a dramatic drop in the number of incidents of excessive force reported throughout the United States.
Thank you, Ms. Clement.
Okay, I'll answer.
Yes.
Thank you. So I agree with Ms. Clement. I think those reforms would be great for the country as a whole. Here in Arlington, we basically we banned chokeholds a long time ago. We are looking at a citizen review board, and I fully expect us to have one, get one in place, but we're working it through exactly how to do that. We have done good training with our police for crisis intervention. So when people are in mental health crisis, they're handled in a way that doesn't criminalize them and doesn't make the crisis worse. But we are looking at ways to make it even more handled by mental health professionals. But there's always going to be a role for police because sometimes people in mental health crisis are a danger to themselves and others. But I think we can do more with that. We're also we're looking at, even before all of these changes and things happen, looking at having our traffic enforcement done by non-armed, non-uniformed folks, not having the police handle traffic enforcement. So I think those can make some things better. We've got a good citizens review group looking at things now and working with an internal review that's going on. I'm really pleased that's being worked through. And I think that will put us in a better position. We've been a leader for a long time. I think our police are really very, very good, but you can always get better. And we can always continue to improve. And I'm looking forward to having some of these changes, such as the Citizen Review Board, and taking police more out of mental health crises and out of traffic enforcement. Looking at my notes, we never
Thank
have
you,
bought
Ms. Garvey,
military equipment. We don't do that. Okay.
Yeah. All right. Thank you so much. Okay. And the next question will be going to you first. And this is, in 2019, the county board adopted an equity resolution to address racial disparities and advance opportunities for all. What is your top priority for a program or policy that will help achieve the goals of the resolution?
You know, I think what we're doing this fall, we'll be announcing at our September meeting, I believe, a series of roundtables, because equity issues, it's in the air we breathe, the water we drink. People are just often unaware of things that are going on. And I think with all of the The police brutality that we've been seeing all too clearly, and the real trauma. Everyone is realizing that systemic racism is a deal, and it's real, and it's absolutely got to stop. But I think we still don't really see how it's going on in our own lives and what that means for us. So I think it's going to take a lot of in-depth conversation, and we're going to be working that through. And included in that, we'll be looking at things like, do we change the names of places like Lee Highway or Lee Community Center? Do we change our logo? Do we change our seal? There are a lot of discussions that need to be had. And our missing middle study, one of the areas of the study, just to get us prepared, we haven't even started the conversation, is actually all on racial equity issues and the history of that in our zoning policies. And I think the more our community understands our history and where we came from and how we got here, the more likely we are going to be able to actually really address it. Because equity issues for too long have just been kind of swept under the rug, and people of color are very aware of them, and everybody else has been kind of blissfully unaware, and that needs to stop.
Thank you, Ms. Garvey. Mm-hmm.
To promote racial justice, we need to reject the current bogus narrative framed on symbolism rather than substance. In 2018, when I ran for Arlington School Board, my opponent, incumbent school board member Barbara Kinnunen, touted her initiative to rename Washington Lee High School. I opposed this move as a distraction from the real issue, which is an increasing minority student achievement gap. In 2019, it was subsequently revealed that Arlington Public Schools, APS, had been under investigation by the U.S. Department of Justice, DOJ, for violating the rights of students designated as English learners. As a result, APS was forced to enter into a consent decree with DOJ stipulating a long list of remedial measures to address the denial of immigrant student rights. Not only had APS failed to reduce the achievement gap, it had failed to provide an equal educational opportunity for 20% of the student population. This, to me, epitomizes the futility of symbols over substance.
Thank you, Ms. Clement. Okay, our next question will go to you first. This is the final question of the evening. Arlington has a significant water management and infrastructure issue that will not be resolved with more and bigger pipes or using park streams for stormwater runoff. What is your plan?
Well, the first thing that I want to do is educate public officials on the importance of mature tree preservation as a first line of defense against runoff and flooding. In fact, we are going to be spending up to $200 million for stormwater remediation over the next 10 years, according to the county manager. I estimate of that amount, at least $25 million will be spent to mitigate the damage caused by the county's removal of over 1,000 trees from construction sites on public property throughout the county. Now, that's a phenomenal amount of money, I think. Certainly, $25 million is not a drop in the bucket. It's a substantial amount of money. And of course, there is all kinds of other damage associated with mature tree removal. And for those who are unaware of it, in 2018, the county permitted a subdivision that allowed the destruction of a 75-year-old champion Don Redwood in North Arlington.
Thank you, Ms. Clement.
Okay.
Ms. Garvey.
Yeah, all right, thank you. So our problem is trees are great. Trees are really important. That adds up. I would invite everyone to look at our Flood Resilient Arlington page, where there's a picture from the 1930s of a nice stream going through North Arlington. And there are a lot of houses, but there are not many trees at all. It's all fields. And looking at that picture today, where there are lots and lots of trees, there are lots of houses, but you can't see the stream because it's underground, except when we had the July 8 storm, and that stream reappeared right in the same channel because it had been undergrounded and no longer fit in the underground pipes. You're absolutely right, whoever asked the question, that bigger pipes won't do it. But we do need to find ways to provide relief for all the water that comes in that we tried to put into pipes that are far too small. Cisterns is one of the things I think we need to use to catch the water before it pours on down the hills, and we are looking at building that in even in some parks. And I think that is an important thing to be doing to so you can catch the water and store it. We are looking at purchasing properties sometimes where there are places where the pipes are not working right and they need to be redone, but they're under houses because of the way things were built. So there may be places where we need to purchase properties to improve the water flow. But also there are places where people really probably shouldn't be building basements.
Thank you, Ms. Kirby. Okay, that concludes the questioning portion. And now closing statements. And Ms. Garvey, you will go first.
Okay. All right. Thank you so much. So I'd like to thank you, Alan, and the CFED for holding this virtual forum tonight. Thanks so much. Arlington, you know, has always had a very involved community. And this pandemic has not changed that. And indeed, I think virtual forums like this have actually made it easier for some people. Not everyone can take several hours out of their evening and leave home and attend a meeting or forum. And I'm actually hopeful that one of the good things that may come out of this pandemic will be more flexible ways for people to participate in our Arlington community. It should particularly help those who have responsibilities at home, can't leave children or perhaps aging parents, or those who are traveling and would like to participate more. These are really challenging times. We've got to get the kids back in school, and that is a really tough issue right now. But these times are full of opportunities. I predict this will be a difficult year coming forward, but in the end, I think we do these things right, we will have a more equitable, resilient, and involved community. I very much want to continue to serve you. This has been my life's work serving Arlington County. I think I've got the experience and what is needed to guide us through this pandemic and into recovery, and I hope you'll agree, and I hope I will have your vote and your support. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Garvey. And Ms. Clement.
The choice in this year's county board race is clear. Do you want an engaged community leader or a rubber stamp? The only gold-plated boondoggle Libby Garvey has ever said no to was the Pike Trolley. Now she is pushing missing middle upzoning that will displace existing homeowners but produce no affordable housing. She also remains silent about Takis Keratonis' dual role as vice chair of the Alliance for Housing Solutions, the principal advocate for missing middle upzoning, while he is also serving on county board. As an independent on county board, I won't claim credit for rubber stamping done deals, and I won't ignore fellow board members' conflicts of interest. I will serve your best interests. Help me restore confidence in county government by visiting my website, www.audreyclement.com, supporting my candidacy, volunteering, or donating for my campaign, and voting for me on November the 3rd. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Ms. Clement and Ms. Garvey. Thank you both for joining us this evening.
Thanks a lot. Take care, Alan. Thank you.
Take care. Take care so much. Thank you. All right, that concludes the County Board candidates portion of the meeting this evening. Up, we will have candidates for the school board. I will have Ms. Simone Walker, Mr. David Pretty, and Ms. Christina Diaz-Torres. Due to unforeseen circumstances, Ms. Walker's statements and responses to the questions were recorded in advance, so bear with me while I toggle back and forth between that. And I will go through the same procedure for order of speaking. I just want to make sure that our candidates, Mr. Pretty and Ms. Diaz-Torres, I see Ms. Diaz-Torres and Mr. Pretty, are you?
Hey there.
There, I see you both, excellent. All right, great. Okay, so I'm gonna go back to Google again, and I promise you I don't own any Google stock, and even if I did, it wouldn't do any good because I'd have like maybe one, not even one share, maybe a millionth of a share. All right, and so we're gonna do this for three candidates this time. And I'm just going to refresh the screen again, just so you guys see. And we're going to go for three candidates. And let me see, we have Diaz Torres, Pretty, and then Walker. So it'll be in that order. So this first number that I'm going to generate is for Christina Diaz Torres. Okay, so between one and three, generate the number for her, which is going to be 1. Okay. And then I clicked it twice. Sorry about that. All right. Ms. Diaz Torres will be number 1. And then the second click was for Mr. Pretty. So you will be number 2. And that leaves Ms. Walker as number 3. Okay. Let me stop sharing. I'm just going to make a note of that so I don't mess it up, which is easy enough to do. Okay, so we'll follow the same process. We'll have opening statements, Ms. Diaz Torres first, Mr. Pretty second, and then I'll play Ms. Walker's third. And then we'll go through the order of questions. Number 2 will go first in question number 1, then number 3, then number 1, and the same, you know, and then we'll loop through it, okay? So we'll start off with Ms. Diaz-Torres. Lois, are you ready to?
I am ready, thank you, yes.
Let me know when I can start.
When you start, I will.
Great.
I lost your video. There you are, okay. All right, go ahead.
Awesome. Thank you so much, and hello, Civic Federation members and delegates. I'm Cristina Diaz-Torres. I'm a former teacher and an education policy specialist running as one of your 2 democratically endorsed candidates for Arlington School Board, because I believe that every student has a right to succeed. I began my career as a high school math teacher, and being a teacher was the most rewarding job I've ever had. But I was working in a district that faced some serious challenges. When I walked into the classroom on my first day of school, I saw 54 students, but only 48 desks. My students were there to learn math, but our elected leaders were failing at basic arithmetic. So how do we create an education system where all students have a right to succeed, no matter their race, their income, their ability, or their socioeconomic status? It's actually really simple. We start by working together. I advocate for a collaborative framework for education governance, where we all work together to co-design policies that are equitable, efficient, and community appropriate. As a policy specialist, I work every day with education organizations across the country to do just that. And I'm already an advocate right here at home in Arlington as a member of a number of local commissions for budgets and long-term planning. I'm running for school board because I believe that no district is better positioned than us to build back a more equitable and adaptable school system.
Thank you very much. Okay, Mr. Pretty.
Thank you. Hello, fellow CIDFED delegates and members. Many of you know me from my work on the CIDFED Schools Committee. But if this is our first introduction, I am David Pretty. I'm a parent of 2 sons in APS, a business leader, and a lifelong Arlingtonian running for 1 of 2 open seats on the Arlington County School Board, because I know that with proper planning, we can build back a more equitable and transparent APS. Before stepping back from the workforce to support my family at home, I was a professional leader in the vertical transportation industry. I understand the business side of APS, having firsthand experience overseeing multi-million dollar budgets, partnering with labor unions, and managing construction projects. I've also served as the president of the TJ Middle School PTA, as a member of the Arlington Heights Schools and Facilities Committee, and in many other public capacities. I am on the ground every day with parents, students, and teachers, and I'm ready to bring their voices to the Arlington School Board if elected this November. I know the great work all of you do for the community, and welcome your questions tonight.
Thank you, Mr. Pretty. And I will now share the video that was pre-recorded by Ms. Walker. Bear with me a moment, please. It's here somewhere. Show all windows. There we go.
School board to be.
Sorry,
I I am Simone Walker, an APS parent and education activist, serving in the school community for the past decade and most recently as co-chair of the NAACP Education Committee. I'm running for school board to be an instrument of change, as a lot needs to change. The opportunity gap has not closed in decades. Our reading curriculum is leaving students further behind. Struggling students are graduating semi-literate. Our Black and Latino students are performing far below their white and Asian counterparts and under the Virginia state average, which is already low. APS spends nearly $20,000 per pupil, yet has been unable to close the opportunity gap. We still have no equity framework, and our schools are more segregated now, 66 years after Brown and 61 years after Stratford. For too long, the school board has hyper-focused on boundaries and buildings and neglected curriculum and instruction. APS has a literacy crisis, and I am the only candidate that has written legislation to improve literacy. When we teach to the students in the margins, every student benefits. I ask for your vote on November the 3rd.
Okay. I hope that was intelligible for everybody. Sorry about the glitch. Our first question, and Mr. Pretty, you will respond to this question first. APS currently faces a budget deficit despite severe budget cuts. What has been the biggest challenge that you've devoted more time and energy to than anything else?
I guess, you know, you can go through different scenarios personally. I've run a marathon and I've performed on stage and nice milestones like that. But I'd say the biggest one for me is definitely being a father. And those of you who have kids know that once you leave that hospital, there's no manual and there's nothing you can read to say, hey, this is how you take care of a kid. And then that's what you're dealt with. And that's probably the most rewarding piece. And for the last 20 months, I've had the opportunity to be with both of my kids as a stay-at-home dad. And it's been the most rewarding thing for me and most challenging as well. Luckily, I was brought up pretty well, so I had some good role models to live by in my parents. So I feel lucky that I was trained the right way.
Thank you very much. And Ms. Diaz-Torres?
So I alluded to this in my opening statement, but by far the most difficult thing I've ever done is being a teacher. I was a teacher in a district that had a whopping total of $6,000 per student. The school that I taught at had 2,500 kids, and the majority of them, 80% plus, were on free and reduced lunch. So it was a really difficult place to work, and yet we did amazing things. We were able to achieve relative parity in achievement across all of our demographic groups. Our gaps were between 5% or less across the board. And it was all through working together as a team and really collaborating, making sure that we understood our students, understood our community, and worked together to make sure that every single student was met by need in my name. And so it was a lot. I definitely worked tons of hours, and I have so much respect to all of our APS teachers who are doing the real work today. But it's one of the most rewarding things I've ever done in my entire life.
Thank you so much. Okay. And now I'm going to play the video for Ms. Walker. Find it. Here we go.
Is to get consistency in our reading curriculum. We have what I call the equivalent of educational redlining, where it depends on where you go to school. You might get higher quality curriculum for reading instruction. I have been before the school board several times advocating for consistency in structured literacy, as well as writing to the school board and advocating on AEM and getting the word out as much as possible. I've also written legislation, HR 332, which passed the House but not the Senate last year. I've been down to Richmond lobbying for that, spent a lot of time with lawmakers, and I'm not giving up. We're going to try again this year, but we need structured literacy for every student in Arlington to close our literacy gap.
Wonderful. Thank you so much. Okay. And that is me making a lot of noise there. And for this next question, Ms. Walker will actually be going first, so I'll go ahead and share that one as well. Here we go. Question number two. APS currently faces a budget deficit despite severe budget cuts. With plausible additional budget cuts or freezes from the state and county for next year, how do you anticipate covering the revenue loss not just this year, but in the next school year as well? Furloughs, reductions in staffing, increased class sizes?
That one's difficult. I think we need to ask for more money from the county, for one. What we absolutely cannot do is cut funding for curriculum and instruction. That cannot be sacrificed under any circumstances or any programs that require equity. We have to, though, look at how we're perhaps wasting funds and look at how we can streamline and save on funds. I think one way we could have done that is to replace iPads with cheaper Chromebooks for students, and then not have to then purchase keyboards for them as well. But that boat has sailed, but we would have to look at those kinds of cost-cutting measures for the next budget cycle. And I would avoid cutting staff as much as possible.
Thank you very much. Okay, Mr. Pretty, would you like me to repeat the question or do you have it?
I think it's Christina's turn, right?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry, it is her turn. You are right. this is so complicated.
It's okay, we'll be fine.
Okay, go ahead, please.
Okay, I don't think I'm on the center of the screen, so I'm not sure if people on Facebook can see me.
Yeah, you're unspotlighted.
Okay, I'm not spotlighted. Okay. Well, this is going to be a complicated question, so I'll get started with the question. It's going to be a really complicated question, and we're going to have to face the reality. Education budgets across the country are going to be hit by anywhere between 10 and 25%, and we're going to be facing a really tough budget for the next couple of years. It's all going to depend on what our local assessments come in January when property values are assessed. I think this is a really important place where collaboration is absolutely critical, not just with the community to identify where we can make cuts to things that Simone alluded to, figuring out where we can find efficiencies, figuring out things that we might need to go without in the interim, or at least put a pause on spending for right now, but also collaborating at different levels of government. The reality is that the only way that we're going to get out of that 20 or potentially 25% budget deficit is with a significant investment from the federal government. We need to have a CARES Act 4.0 or whatever number we're on at this point, to make sure that we can fill those budget gaps and keep everyone on the payroll. For me, the biggest priority is keeping everyone on the payroll, and that is absolutely the last cut that I would be willing to make, and I'd be looking at every other resource possible prior to potentially making that cut.
Thank you very much. Okay. And Mr. Pretty.
All right, so what do we do about budget issues, especially in the era of COVID, where we already know that the money we're getting from Virginia is going to be less than we know and had been planned? We'll find out the true revenue of, or a better idea of what the revenue is going to be from Arlington County in October. But for now, we are understanding that we are operating with a long way to go. And so what do you do? Basically, your budget is comprised of 80% is your operation, your salaries, is your salary piece and compensation and packages. Your 10% roughly is debt service. So then there leaves that middle 10 where that's what we have to look at. And historically, Arlington has looked at programs and how do you cut programs instead of cutting personnel. And I think we're going to have to look at it the same way, unless, as Christina stated, that we're going to get CARES Act money. And this is where my background comes in, where my professional background comes in. I've had to make decisions on what to cut and what's in the best interest of the business. And in this way, this would be the community. And being from Arlington, knowing the pulse of Arlington, I know that I'm the right person to make those decisions.
Thank you very much. Okay. So our next question, and Ms. Diaz-Torres will answer this one first. What do you think needs to be done to have better coordination with the county board on growth projections and facilities planning?
Okay. I'm just making sure that I'm unmuted. Okay, great. So we have growth facilities and projections and facilities planning has definitely been the priority for our board for at least the last 10 years, if not longer. We have had a lot of really positive work that has happened over the past couple of years, improving the data that underlies the projections and that feeds into our projections. So making sure that we're continuing to analyze the algorithm, making sure that we're keeping it accurate. There was an excellent process that happened earlier this summer that invited the community to take a look at the algorithms and at the data itself, the underlying data. And we need to make sure that we're bringing our community in and truly collaborating them, using them as authentic partners in this process to make sure that we're making the best decisions going forward. I'm excited to see in a post-pandemic world where we might be able to revisit a lot of the conversations that were on the table pre-pandemic. I do think that we're going to need to figure out places where we can co-locate facilities. I've been a member of the JFAC for the last 2 years, the Joint Facilities Advisory Commission, whose charge was to do that. And I'm really excited to get that opportunity once we get past this this negative fiscal cycle that we're in right now, and when we get past this crisis. It will require a lot of coordination and collaboration, and I am building and continuing relationships with my colleagues on the county board to make sure that we can do that collaboration effectively.
Thank you very much. Okay.
That's me, right?
Yes.
Okay. So I've been talking about this piece for months now. Back in December, our county manager released a list of sites that can be used both from the county and the school side. And as a result of that list, that opens up everything, as Christina referenced, the JFAC, the Joint Facility Advisory Committee, it opens them up for actually being able to create a roadmap of what facilities we can use and when we can use them. And this is, I've been in contact with the JFAC chair and the FAC chair this summer. I've talked to them about where we're going and gotten some good feedback from them. And I'm definitely in tune with this one. There is the piece on the growth projections is that we know from last year that there is a birth rate has declined nationwide. So as a result, our numbers are a little skewed, but I will say the county and the school board, this is not school board, the school staff has worked very hard in the last couple of years of getting those growth projections to be correct. And the demographer on the county side is pretty good. And it's honed in now to where let's create these facilities, figure out where we need to go and move forward.
Thank you, Mr. Pretty. I'm going to share Ms. Walker's response.
That is a good question. I don't know how much APS, the current school board, is coordinating with the county. But I think one thing they need to do is also get out into the community to get a feel for who's there. For example, when I volunteered for several years at the pre-K information night, the amount of parents that I saw coming in pregnant and with toddlers was a really good indication of, wow, we're really gonna have a boom in 5 years. But I think they need probably to hire better consultants and experts as well to do these projections, because they've been really off. And we need to do a better job of that. And we need to get out into the community and see people. So that's basically what I have
on that one. Great, thank you. Okay. And for our next question, it'll be question number 4. And first up will be Mr. Pretty. The county has offered the schools a list of county parks for consideration for potential school sites. Given the overwhelming support in the county for green space and the lack of public engagement, are you prepared to take off the table all of the listed parks other than those which were originally school sites.
That's a good one. And it leads back into the last answer that I gave. And now that we have a site of all the, a list of all the facilities, here comes the engagement piece. Here's where that JFAC comes in, and they get together and talk about it as a community and get all aspects of the community to decide on what we should do with it. So that's where I would go with that. The piece about the parks is, I can tell you that I was on the BLPC for the Career Center, and we dedicated a whole night to the trees and the stormwater management. So I know that the issues are prevalent, and they're very complicated to understand, and I'm ready to embrace those. And we need to get that collaboration going with the JFAC and lean on them, as I've said in a lot of my platform. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Pretty. Ms. Diaz-Torres.
Great. So this is an important one. I actually moved to Arlington specifically because of the green space. I had previously lived in two areas I was in New York City and Las Vegas, Nevada, which were essentially devoid of anything green. So moving here, it was very important that I could see trees out my window. The reality of where we're at right now in terms of construction is that we need to investigate everything that's on the table and then make the decisions as a community. As David alluded to, we're going to need to have a very robust and engaging community conversation about which of the school sites or which of the proposed sites will actually end up becoming schools. Certainly the ones that were previously schools are already set up in the way that they might transition more effectively, but we need to have the conversation together. And I know that there are a lot of advocates who very much believe and value our green spaces and our trees, and I really welcome engaging with all of you to make sure that we're finding a balance between determining which sites we need in order to be able to have seats for our children. As Simone alluded to, we have kids that are coming down the pike. We have to make sure that we have seats for them, while also preserving our green spaces and all the things that make Arlington as wonderful as it is.
Thank you very much. Okay, and I'm going to now play Ms. Walker's response.
No, I would not take all of that off the table. You know, I understand that we have competing interests for green space, but we're also bursting at the seams as a county. And the school overcrowding issue is not just an APS issue, it's an Arlington issue. And I think everybody has to be prepared to give a little and sacrifice some. And so, no, I would not take that off the table. At all. I think we need to consider every possible space that could be available to ease the overcrowding that we have. There is no indication that that is easing up or that, you know, our population in Arlington is decreasing. More people are moving here and staying.
Great. Okay. So that was the question number four. Question number five, Ms. Walker is up to answer that one next. And bear with me while I share my screen. Actually, what I'll do is I'll read the question here and then I will play her response. So, school board races are by law nonpartisan, yet the parties limit competition by endorsing candidates and requiring pledges and loyalty oaths to support the candidates who win their endorsement process. Do you agree with this process? If not, what will you do to change it? Okay, and let me share now.
I do not agree with this process for two reasons. The school board is nonpartisan for a reason, and it needs to remain that way, right? The education issues that are impacting children of Democrats are the same education issues that are impacting children of Republicans. The ACDC process is in my view, disenfranchising. The pledge that people are asked to sign, I believe, is non-democratic, undemocratic, and it disenfranchises people from supporting who they think would be the best candidate for school board. The process is also designed not to put the needs of Arlington children first, but to support the continued power of ACDC. And I would propose eliminating it altogether and go to just a nonpartisan election by all candidates running for school board.
Okay. Ms. Diaz-Torres, you're up.
This is an important question that's come up numerous times throughout this election. School boards are nonpartisan by definition. The parties choose to endorse of their own volition, and they are an endorsement just like any other. Throughout the process, I know that David, Simone, and myself all worked to secure endorsements from individuals, from groups, from organizations, from entities, and that the Arlington Democrats endorsement is just one of many. That unfortunately, that is the process, and that is how this works. I do think that I would be hard pressed to ask any of our current school board members and think that they do not believe in every student and think that they do not represent every student. The reason that I chose to run for this office is not just because of supporting the Democratic Party's power. It is because I truly believe that we need to educate and empower every single student and that every single student has a right to succeed. That's what my motivating factor is. That's what my why for running for this. And this is just the structure.
Thank you, Ms. Diaz-Torres. Mr. Pretty.
So I ran last year and in the caucus and did not get the endorsement. And so I ran full well this year, understanding the rules and understanding how to play the game, so to speak. So I guess I come out with a different perspective where I knew what I was getting into going in. And as a result, I'm not going to denounce the process because that's part of how you get elected in Arlington. I can tell you that my platform of equity has not changed. It is still the same. And so is the piece on capacity planning and proper planning. So I would say I would not take away the process, but I understand the rules and plan within those rules.
Okay, thank you very much. All right, our next question, and this one will be answered by Ms. Diaz-Torres first. Does Arlington currently have the right balance of resource allocation and or programs to close achievement gaps, engage the majority mainstream students, and challenge the gifted? If not, where do you envision changes?
So the short answer to that is no, as evidenced by our persistent achievement gaps. But the answer is not just a one size fits all. So I can't give you a magical list of things that are going to solve. If we do these five things, it's going to solve everything for everybody. Our new superintendent has come in with a very explicit focus, meeting every student by need and by name. And I very much believe in that. The needs of a student who happens to be gifted are very different from the needs of a student who happens to be an emergent bilingual, are very different from the needs of a student who happens to be a student with disabilities. And we need to figure out what all of those students need holistically and then provide those resources accordingly. At the school system level, that looks like figuring out what are the resources that need to be allocated school by school and then empowering those school leaders to make those decisions on the ground and following up. Figuring out what worked, what didn't work, how can we improve this, where do we need to reallocate funding in the future. But there's not just a magical solution. You can't wave a magic wand and have a one-size-fits-all approach for all kids. We need to be very judicious and holistic in how we are assessing the needs for each individual child and then supporting them at where they are and meeting them where they are.
Thank you. And Mr. Pretty.
Yeah, so the answer to this goes back to my platform, where I have a four-step plan for equity which is hiring teachers that represent the diversity of the student population, teaching cultural competence, ensuring that the new superintendent and the CDEIO that they are on board, and it's not just they're committed for the strategy for equity and inclusion. And then it's also, how do we measure it? And we measure it through the strategic plan over parameters and metrics that we define ourselves. And part of that, the equity plan is going from, instead of a system of schools, to a school system. And it lies within each school to have, each school has a principal management plan. And that's, the principal submits that plan every year. And if we can get those consistent, then we can have a consistent curriculum throughout the entire APS, instead of having here and there and plugging from different types of curriculums. So that's the plan, and that's how we can do it moving forward.
Thank you, Mr. Pretty. And now I will share Ms. Walker's response.
That they have the right amount of resources. We are a resource-rich county. We spend $20,000 per pupil. There is no reason why we're unable to close the opportunity gap. I think they have to look at how they're using those resources and shift them around. For example, you know, you can't give every school the same number of reading specialists. That's not necessarily equitable. You have to distribute resources based on the need. And so some schools might need a shifting to get more resources to dedicate towards academic performance where they are suffering, versus other schools who already have the resources and don't need additional support.
Okay. All right, so our next question, and this will be answered first by Mr. Pretty, then by Ms. Walker, and then by Ms. Diaz-Torres. All right. What steps would you recommend to bolster teacher retention?
To bolster teacher retention. So you have to, I'll use the example of, you have to create facilities that they want to work in. You have to make it a better working environment for them, and you have to make them want to come to work each day where it's a fun place to be. We found out the newly constructed Fleet Building was not up to what the teachers were expecting, and they were not happy last year at Fleet, and it was very obvious. And me being part of the PTA, I was trying to advocate for them. Over the summer, I spoke at a county board meeting and got the parking lot open, so they have 23 more spaces now to park there between Fleet and with TJ. So that's a success of understanding how the system works and enacting and helping teachers out at the same time. But it's got to be a consistent message that is going throughout the entire system, and it's got to be you have to want to come to work, and you have to make people understand that they are appreciated and valued, and that's what we hope to do. When we right size the budget once the pandemic comes back, gets over.
Next up, I have Ms. Walker.
That is difficult to do in a budgetary crisis and, you know, during COVID-19, because I recognize we're going to be at a teacher shortage. We have a critical shortage of special education teachers. A lot of those teachers that are trained are moving into general education because of the burden of the paperwork of the interim progress reports. For a situation like that, we need to come up with creative solutions, like giving the teachers more planning time or more, perhaps more days where they can work on those types of schedules and reduce the burden administratively so we can retain them in those positions. Of course, when we're in a better budgetary position, we need to be doing step increases annually to retain teachers, and they need better benefits. We should be partnering with the county for better health benefits so that they can take advantage of what the county employees have as well.
Okay, and now Ms. Diaz-Torres.
Great. Having been a teacher myself, this is very near and dear to my heart. There are a couple of technical solutions that we can engage in. The first one is teacher-driven PD, making sure that the professional learning that we're offering is really tailored to what our teachers are looking for. It's designed to meet their needs in the moment. We saw a lot of good examples of that in the last 2 weeks as we've led up to the start of school. We saw a lot of collaboration time and opportunities for folks to engage in just-in-time learning. It's also a lot of coaching to make sure that they are working through any kinks in their practice or things that they might need to change or modify or improve in order to improve student outcomes. But I think that the biggest thing actually is giving them a seat at the table. We have enabling legislation that was passed in this last year's General Assembly that would allow our Arlington Education Association to petition if they would like to become a union and have a seat at the table to engage in a collective bargaining agreement. And I really think that they need to be engaged as equal members co-creating the solutions that we're going to need in the future, especially going forward in this rough pandemic years.
Thank you, Ms. Diaz-Torres. Okay. So now it is time for closing statements, and we will do this in the reverse order. Ms. Walker will go first, then Mr. Preedy, and then Ms. Diaz-Torres, you will go last. Okay. All right, so I'm going to pull up this last video from Ms. Walker. Bear with me for a moment. Closing, there it is. Okay. Share screen.
When I began my campaign in January, my platform had many themes with equity as the overarching focus, but I've had to quickly pivot to address the impacts of COVID on our students' education. I've been steadily engaging with the community on these issues and all complexities involved with the reopening of schools and distance learning, proposing solutions and problem solving. My 20 years as a government attorney has made me adept at handling curveballs and navigating unpredictability and uncertainty. With an LLM in conflict resolution and 15 years as a mediator, I know how to manage conflict. I can work effectively with people with whom I disagree and find mutual interest. Having worked much of my career in the counterintelligence field, I can identify and mitigate risk to avoid catastrophe. These are the leadership skills that we need on the school board and is what I will bring to the table. I'm a lifelong Democrat with progressive democratic values, running outside of ACDC because of the Hatch Act. I'm asking for you to vote for me on November the 3rd.
Okay. Mr. Preedy.
Thank you.
Statement, please.
And thanks for having me tonight. Thank you for your time. I have a vision to achieve equity in APS and a plan to go along with it. I have a vision for dealing with the planning and capacity issues and how I will collaborate to help bring the school board forward to help APS in the future. Having the boots on the ground involvement in everyday APS affords me the perspective of understanding how to take us through COVID-19 as a community and with the business background to make fiscally responsible decisions. As one of the democratically endorsed candidates for school board, I ask for your vote on November 3rd. I'm David Preedy.
Thank you, Mr. Preedy. Okay, thank you very much for all three of our candidates. I wish you all the best.
I have my closing statement.
I'm sorry.
Nope, no problem.
Man, oh man.
It's fine.
Once in every forum. I've done it myself.
It's fine. I'm glad we're figuring this out. So thank you everybody for asking such incredible questions. Today was a really big day for families all across Arlington as the first day of school. And I'm glad that this conveniently coincided on the same day. Our students returned to school, and there were more than a few hurdles as they attempted to navigate this new virtual terrain. But fortunately, Arlington is home to a wealth of talent, knowledge, and experience. Our committed staff worked really hard and quickly today, and will continue to do so over the coming weeks to resolve problems that our families face so that this year can just be an excellent one for all of our kids. I truly believe that if we all work together and stakeholders like all of us here today are authentically heard, that no district in the country is better positioned to build back a more equitable and adaptable education system than is APS. So thank you so much for being here tonight. Thank you for your commitment to making APS a district where every student has a right to succeed. Ultimately, the decision about who to cast your vote for is a deeply personal one. So if you have any more questions or just want to discuss the issues, email me at christina@christinaforarlington.com. I'm happy to set up a time to chat, and I will put my email in the chat after I finish speaking. Otherwise, please check out my website at christinaforarlington.com to learn more about my platform, sign up for email updates, donate if you can, and get involved. And don't forget to vote for my colleague, David Priddy, and myself, Christina Diaz-Torres, this November 3rd.
Thank you, Ms. Diaz-Torres. Right on time, and sorry about that. Okay.
Did we do Simone's closing?
Yes, we did hers first.
Okay, great, thanks. Mm-hmm.
All right, and thank you all so much for participating this evening. Sorry for all the technical glitches. It gets complicated, but I think we got through everything. All right, our next item on the agenda will be our panel from the United States House of Representatives, Mr. Don Beyer, and Mr. Jeff Jordan. Okay, and I'm gonna stop my share here. And are they both here on the Zoom?
I'm here.
Jordan, there you are, okay. I'm going to spotlight you and I'm going to unspotlight you for a second. Then Mr. Beyer, are you here as well?
Yes, I am.
There you are. Excellent. All right. Hopefully I don't have to do too much toggling around to find you guys both. Okay. So I'm going to follow the same procedure that I followed a moment ago, where I will have a Google-generated random number and we'll go in alphabetical order by last name. So Mr. Beyer, I'm going to generate your number first.
Okay.
And give me 1 second here. Let me share my, first I'm going to refresh the screen. I'm going to go between 1 and 2. And this is generating Mr. Beyer's number. And Mr. Beyer, you will be going second, number 2. Okay. So Mr. Jordan, you will be going first. And we were going to have an opening statement, 7 questions, which I will read, and a closing statement. And what we'll do is first we'll have the opening statement by Mr. Jordan, then by Mr. Beyer, and then the first question will be answered by Mr. Beyer, then by Mr. Jordan, and we'll go in that order. Okay, so Mr. Beyer, if you are ready, please go ahead with your opening statement. Mr. Jordan. Mr. Jordan.
Okay.
Mr. Jordan, you are first.
Okay, thank you. Thanks to the Arlington County Civic Federation for having us. Don, good to see you again. It's been a whole 48 hours. And I want to thank everybody else that's watching online. I'm Jeff Jordan. I'm the Republican nominee for U.S. Congress in Virginia's 8th District. I am a native born of this district. I was born at Fort Belvoir, the 5th consecutive generation of combat veteran in my family. And I have fought socialism and tyranny my whole life. And I find myself now in this race to do exactly the same thing, but here on American soil. That might be alarmist, but I've been around the world. I've seen it for real. I understand the dangers. There are people here that will deny it, but it is present. It is here. It's a danger. It needs to stop. It needs to stop now. But really, who am I as a person? What do I believe in? I believe that the free enterprise system is the most productive supplier of human needs and economic justice. And I've heard a lot of talk tonight about economics and the importance to individuals in this community.
Thank you, Mr. Jordan. We have the statements there limited to 1 minute, just as a reminder.
Okay.
Mr. Beyer, go ahead, please.
Thank you. Good evening, Alan. Thank you for inviting me back to this time-honored debate, which I've been part of off and on for more than 30 years. Civic federations are the heart of our democracy. And it's been an extraordinary honor to serve you for the last 6 years. And I ask for your vote again on November 3rd. I've been trying to express my values in everything I do. Integrity, courage, compassion, humility, and a deep belief that we can make America and the world ever better. While my legislative portfolio is huge, because I'd have the best staff on Capitol Hill, I paid the most attention to combating climate change, to helping the most vulnerable through the COVID-19 crisis, and reducing the tragedy of 47,000 American suicides every year. So I welcome Jeff Jordan to the political arena, and I look forward to a lively conversation.
Thank you, Mr. Byron. Okay. Our first question, and the first question will go to Mr. Byer first. What has been the biggest challenge that you've devoted more time and energy to than anything else?
I'm sorry, Alan, I didn't hear the last half of your sentence.
What has been the biggest challenge that you've devoted more time and energy to than anything else?
In my life, or?
Yes. Your choice.
Okay. Well, I mean, the standard answer obviously is going to be raising 4 wonderful children and 2 children and trying to maintain a lifelong marriage. But outside of the standard family stuff, I think I've spent most of my energy, most of my heart on political advocacy. From Jerry Belisle and Ira Lester in the early 80s through Pete Buttigieg and Joe Biden right now, I've been always trying to, mostly in the background, elect those people I thought that could take the country mostly in the right direction. Ultimately, it's the political leaders who decide the structure, who goes to war, who doesn't, who has houses, who doesn't, who has a good school, who doesn't, who determines the amount of income distribution. So I really am deeply committed to our democracy and making it work.
Thank you, Mr. Beyer. Mr. Jordan?
Yes, thank you. So, as I mentioned previously, I've spent my entire adult life fighting socialism. It's hard. It's hard work. I've been around the world. I've been overseas. I've fought the fight against people who want to do nothing but control. America's not about control. America is about liberty. So my job as a citizen is to cultivate and strengthen liberty at every turn. So this goes beyond just me being a soldier, me being an officer. Rights without responsibility is tyranny, and responsibility without rights is slavery. We have to reject the notions and ideals and the implementation of socialist ideologies because they're immoral, irrational, and they're as repugnant as slavery. Individual responsibility is the cornerstone of liberty, and socialism is its antithesis. So there is nothing more difficult, more challenging to a free people than to fight the control that seeks to come in.
Thank you, Mr. Jordan. Okay, the next question, excuse me. The next question is also for you, and we'll start with you.
Okay.
If your party takes the White House, Senate, and House, what would be your top piece of legislation that you haven't been able to pass that you would pass? If not currently in office, what would your marquee piece of legislation look like?
Well, the first thing we have to do is put into place the things that will stop the advance of socialism. I'm going to pound this message, and I'm going to pound it hard. Socialism has no place in this country, period. It stifles innovation. It stifles creativity. The only thing that it brings in any measure of equality is misery. So we have to put mechanisms in place, and I would start with the Department of Education and with our journalism institutions and straighten those out, because that's where the seeds are planted and that's where we get told every day what to think, how to think. It has to stop. We are a free people. Let's be free. Let's exchange ideas. Let's debate. because when you do things that stifle that, you end up with something rotten, because there is no counterbalance. There is no ebb and flow. There is no tide.
Thank you, Mr. Jordan. Mr. Byer?
Alan, if Joe Biden wins, we keep the House and we take back the Senate, my number one legislative priority will be fighting climate change. And I think my legislative priority number one will be carbon pricing. For 6 years now, I've had the lead House bill on carbon pricing, which I think is the best market-oriented solution. Not the only thing we can do, but the most important. Next year, if I win and we keep the House, I'll chair the Joint Economic Committee. And my central goal there will be as many different plans as we can find to overcome the wealth and income inequality in America. A Black family in America is 1/10 the net worth of a white family. That's based on 400 years of repression and slavery. That can change.
Thank you, Mr. Byer. The next question, and Mr. Byer will answer this one first. Do you support the Virginia State Constitutional Amendment to end partisan gerrymandering by setting up a bipartisan district redistricting commission? Please explain your answer either way.
I very strongly support it. You know, I was lieutenant governor for 8 years and I got to preside, and the ugliest debates I saw in those 8 years were over the partisan redistricting, where elected officials got to choose their own voters rather than voters choose their elected officials. There are many in my party that think that this is an imperfect solution and we should reject it. I'm not willing to take that bet. We've worked for decades and decades to get a nonpartisan commission, and I strongly support this constitutional amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Byer. Mr. Jordan?
Thank you. With regard to gerrymandering, I think that is a consistent problem, regardless of party, and it's been that way for a long time. It's opportunistic. It divides this country. I think the best way we can do this is to simply go to a county, parish level boundary equation and stop trying to divide communities and start bringing communities together and do it along the boundaries that already exist. Take the fight out of it and simply do it on the most equitable basis with regards to county level or similar boundaries.
Thank you, Mr. Jordan. Our next question, and will be answered by Mr. Jordan first. What are the most important challenges facing our country, and how do you propose to address them? Are there opportunities for Democrats and Republicans to find common ground on these issues?
Well, I've said my entire campaign that all of the issues that we face today, whether it's the Second Amendment, immigration, healthcare, education, it doesn't matter. Those are not problems. Those are symptoms of a larger problem. And that larger problem is socialism. You have people in this country who are in power or in positions of influence that do not want to solve the problems. They want to destroy what this country stands for. So let's get the socialists out of the equation. And then absolutely, Republicans and Democrats can sit down and have a discussion. In fact, in my personal experience in knocking on doors in this district, for every four Democrats that I've spoken with personally, three of them have come to me. I have yard signs in Democrat yards in this district because they're shifting. They understand that the Democrat Party no longer represents the values that they once held. It is now a socialist party.
Thank you, Mr. Jordan. Mr. Byer?
Alan, my top three priorities within our country, the issues I think we need to be addressed. Number one is the income and wealth equality I just mentioned. You know, many, many people are doing well, but the American dream is dead for 40% of American people. Our social mobility, our economic mobility is the lowest point in our history. The second big thing is we have to address our structural racism. We're finally willing to talk about it. It is the dark stain on our history, and it is still real. And finally, we need a president. We need leaders who will heal us, not divide us. General Mattis said, this president, sad president, is the first one ever who pits American against American. I want someone who will bring us together.
Thank you, Mr. Byer. The next question, Mr. Byer, you will be answering first. What measures do you support to improve and secure elections and voting in our country?
Well, the first thing we could do is pass the HEROES Act, which the House passed on May 15th, that allocated a significant sum of money to state and local governments to secure our systems. If you read the bipartisan Senate report, co-authored by Mark Warner, 1,000 pages, there's an enormous amount about all the Russian ability to tap into local and state electoral systems, our computers themselves. And that's even the smallest part compared to the overall social media impact. We know it's not just Russia, they're the primary ones, but China and others have also been messing in our elections. So securing them, I think, is our highest priority. And we do that by making sure that state and local governments have the funds they need to be state-of-the-art technology and trustworthy people.
Thank you, Mr. Byron. Mr. Jordan?
Thank you. I would add to that that the large number of people that come across our borders every year illegally and then find a way to vote, to me, that's as great a threat to our voting integrity as the Russians or the Chinese. The fact that they are here and engaging and voting illegally is no different. So I would strengthen the border. I would do away with electronic voting and go back to manual voting. It's been proven time and again. There are grade school kids that within 15 minutes can hack into any electronic voting machine and change the results without the user, the voter, even knowing. So, or on the back end without it being able to be detected. So the idea that voting can be secured electronically, I think is a misnomer, even in this country.
Thank you, Mr. Jordan. And the next question you will be answering first. Do you support removing the ratification deadline for the Equal Rights Amendment? Why or why not?
No, I would not extend the deadline because the deadline is there for a reason. And I will give a nod to Senate candidate Dan Gade on his comment that the country now is not the same as the country then. We are in a different place. We are in a different time. We have a different environment, and we need to build legislation for our time. So no, I would not, and that's not to say that there aren't things in that amendment that wouldn't be beneficial. I'm not saying that. But what I'm saying is let's follow the rule of law. That's the country we live in. Let's do our job, do our due diligence, and be responsible.
Thank you, Mr. Jordan. Mr. Byer.
Yeah, Alan, I strongly support removing the time deadline, but I'm not sure that it's necessary. There's nothing in the U.S. Constitution that states that there can be any kind of deadline on the ratification of an amendment. So I'm sticking with Virginia Governor, Virginia Attorney General, who said when Virginia ratified it this last year, it is the law of the land. Now, I know people will push back. It will go to the Supreme Court. If for some reason the Supreme Court doesn't agree with me, I think they will, then we will need to remove that. And it just says we should follow the law, so we will change the law and it will be ratified. By the way, women are still second-class citizens in so many ways in this country, including they're being paid 87 to 68% of what men make for the same jobs in the same positions. The primary argument against the Equal Rights Amendment, Phyllis Schlafly all those years ago, was women in the military, women in combat. That's happened. It's worked out just fine. This is time that becomes our Constitution.
Thank you very much, Mr. Byer. Our final question for the evening, and Mr. Byer will answer this question first. The National Park Service is presently planning to construct a rower's boathouse on the Roslyn shoreline. This project will remove trees and disrupt a natural area in a national park. there are potential alternatives at Gravelly Point with similar water conditions. Do you support or oppose an appropriation of federal funds to construct a boathouse on the shoreline?
I very much support it, and I support it where it's been planned for most of our lives. I think Jim Moran worked on this project for 24 years before I got here. One of my first meetings was with the leaders in Arlington to try to make it happen. It's moving very slowly, but it will be done in an extraordinarily environmentally friendly way. The water around Theodore Roosevelt Island in Georgetown is much more, you know, better for that than Gravelly Point. Gravelly Point has its own huge uses right now, including no parking, which Roslyn could easily provide. So I'm going to continue to work with Arlington leadership and Arlington citizens to make it happen where it has long been planned.
Thank you, Mr. Byer. Mr. Jordan?
Well, I'm not familiar with that particular topic. So I guess the first question I would ask is the boathouse a private entity or a government entity? And but either way, we have national parks in this country that have structures and have commercial activity on them. They're very limited and they're, you know, very controlled. So I think at the end of the day, you know, what it will boil down to is more of a sentimental attachment to that particular area for certain people. Beyond that, I don't know that I have an argument for or against the boathouse.
Okay. Thank you very much, Mr. Jordan. We now have our closing statements, and Mr. Byer, you will be giving your closing statement first, and remember that it's just 1 minute, please.
Okay, thank you, Alan. And thank you again for allowing me to serve you all these years. Yeah, I've had many leadership roles in my life, but none with so many opportunities for true change as serving in the People's House. Now we must renew those expired unemployment benefits for the 30 million Americans out of work. We've got to help state and local governments, including Arlington, close the $1.5 trillion drop in revenues they suffer because of the coronavirus. And we've got to protect our federal workers. I'll fight to restore the values of honor, integrity, truth, and kindness so abandoned and destroyed by this administration. This is a fight for the soul of America, a fight that will determine all of our history to come. I thank my new friend, Jeff Jordan, for his many years of service in the US Army. I ask for your vote again this November 3rd. Please stay healthy.
Mr. Byer. Mr. Jordan, your closing statement, please.
All right, thank you. So again, to the Federation, to Don Byer, to our guests, thank you so much for being here. My platform is built on liberty. And in order to have liberty, we need to have unity. We need to have trust. We need to have honor. We need to have equality. We need to have respect. But most importantly, we need to have the right attitude. And the attitude has to be gratitude, not entitlement. Our respect, it's okay to have different ideas and different opinions about things and be able to share those without being vilified. Equality of opportunity is what this country is about. It doesn't guarantee an outcome. It's all based on individual effort. Honor is doing the right thing for the right reason and fulfilling our responsibilities as citizens, all of us, together, okay? Trust, the trust in this government, in our elected officials on the whole, is broken. And it is imperative to government legitimacy and safe communities to have trust. And we must stand united. We must be together. We must do it for our country, not for our party or for ourselves. And as we move forward, you have a choice in November between liberty and socialism. And we must defeat socialism. Because if we don't, we won't get another shot at liberty. Liberty is the foundation of our national identity and our purpose. That's why people come here. That's why people love it. That's why America is great. Thank you. God bless you. And God bless America.
Thank you, Mr. Jordan. Thank you to both of our candidates for coming out tonight. We really appreciate your time and your service.
Thank you.
Up to both of you in the upcoming election. Okay. We are a little bit behind schedule now, but that was a wonderful set of discussions. And sorry for the slight glitches there, but thank you to all our candidates for participating this evening. Our next item on the agenda is the membership application for the NAACP and branch 7047. They have petitioned to join the Civic Federation as a member. The board has approved this application for membership, and the next step is for the membership to vote. As I mentioned earlier, ballots will be emailed out to all the delegates who registered on this particular topic, as well as on the other topic of approving the minutes. Is Mr. Spain on the Zoom tonight? I know he came in and out. Is he still with us?
Yes, I'm here, Alan.
Okay. Would you care to present? I'm going to
pull up your... I'll share my screen here, if you don't mind.
Yeah, let me just make sure you can do that. All right, go ahead.
Sure. Move this out of the way here. Okay, good evening, everyone, of the Arlington Civic Federation. My name is Julia Spain. I won't be with you alone, but I'm the president of Arlington Branch NAACP. So about a month ago, the Arlington NAACP petitioned the Arlington Civic Federation to join as an organizational member. Now, I've been the president for almost 2 years now. Not sure what happened decades ago, but somehow Arlington Branch NAACP no longer had membership with the Civic Federation. So spoke with the leadership, spoke with the executive committee, and we feel at this time it's very important that our branch obtain membership and work collectively with partners and stakeholders like the Civic Federation. We're already members of the Green Valley Civic Federation. What I'm going to do tonight is just share a few slides with you about our organization. This is a snapshot of a photo a few months back, of some of our members at one of our meetings at Walter Reed Community Center. As of today, we have exactly 595 paid members on our branch. So paid members are annual adults, which is $30 a year. We have a few junior life. We actually have some civil life members, which is $750 each. So if we have 595 paid and about 1,000 people actually on the rolls. And we're continuing to grow. This is a snapshot for those who may not be aware. NAACP was founded back in 1909. We are at the branch level, a 501c4 social justice advocacy organization. The national headquarters is a 501c organization similar to ACCF. Arlington branch of the NAACP was founded back in 1940. It was some issues going on related to education, but Esther Cooper was our first president, and a lot of this is online. But we've been active since that time. Today, the Arlington branch of the NAACP, we have a number of committees, but we're working hard with our education, political action, environmental, and housing. Excuse me, something got in my eyeball. So we're hopeful that the members of Arlington Civic Federation vote us in, and we look forward to being partners with you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Spain. And as I mentioned, the ballot will be going out tonight after the meeting. It will be open until noon tomorrow, and that will be via email. Ballots for the last few meetings. Okay. The next item on our agenda. And let me share again. We have a resolution to establish a governance task force. I'm just going to introduce the resolution today. It's on our website. It's also been emailed in the last newsletter, and I'll read a little bit of it tonight And we will have an open discussion and a vote on this at our next meeting in October. Tonight is just to introduce it. So the resolution is, the state of Virginia has permitted laws permitting Arlington County to use ranked choice voting in its local elections. We've had no significant review or changes to our system of government since 1930 when Arlington had 25,000 residents. I'm not going to read all these bullets. But the Arlington County Civic Federation shall establish an ad hoc task force to re-examine our county governing bodies that will deliver recommendations for potential structural reforms for governance, as well as county board and school board representation, if any is warranted. And the task force will examine and potentially make recommendations on reforms, which may include structural reform through district representation and or multi-member synchronous elections, the size and or remuneration of our county and school boards, ranked choice voting, and a number of other items as well. And again, I'm not gonna go through every single bullet on here, I just want to introduce it to the membership. It was in the last newsletter, it is also on our website, and we will have a discussion and vote on this in October. If there anybody has any questions or comments on this, please send an email to myself, president@civfed.org, and I will share it with the people who are currently working on this initiative. Okay, that is item number one. And that's not the right one, I'm sorry. We have another resolution that I'm going to introduce this evening. Share PowerPoint presentation. Nope, that's not it. Try this again. Share screen. All right, so we have another resolution to increase the size of the Civic Federation's board of directors. This one's pretty short, and again, I'm going to introduce it to you. It was also included in our newsletter. We will have this on the floor for discussion and voting at the next meeting in October. The bylaws allow the board to consist of between 9 and 13 individuals. Currently, we have 9. The board, it has been suggested that the board would benefit from additional members. Membership, this body that I'm currently speaking to, sets the number of board members. And so the resolution is that the board, the county, our Arlington board has voted on this, the Civic Federation, to support adding 2 board seats. And now we're putting this question of expanding the board by 2 seats to the membership at the membership meeting coming up next month in October. Okay. Again, this full resolution was in the last newsletter and it's also on our website. Okay, those are 2 resolutions. One of our bylaws state that every year the presidents shall have an audit committee examine our books and generate an audit letter. We have done so in conjunction with Bert Bostwick, our treasurer. Here is the letter, and it also is going to be posted on our website. Basically, we have our bank statements have been reviewed. And the auditor has certified that the statement accurately represents all the balances, the transactions, according to generally accepted accounting principles. Again, this is also going to be available on our website, and the link is in the chat. Okay, new business. There is a request for another resolution by the Friends of the Arlington Parks in support of the 2020 park bonds. I'm just going to read the therefore. The full resolution is on the website. The resolution is basically in favor of supporting the 2020 Parks and Recreation bond issues, urges all voters to vote yes, and urges the Arlington County Board to implement parkland acquisition policies to achieve these particular goals. Mr. Wind, are you on the meeting tonight?
Yes, sir.
Would you care to make a brief comment on this point?
Sure. My 30-second elevator speech.
Please.
I've been working for the park bond issue campaign every 2 years since 1992.
This year, because of uncertainties due to revenue uncertainties due to COVID, the county board has divided it into two bond issues, one of $3.6 million that will be considered this November, and another amount to be determined that will be considered next November. It addresses an issue that's near and dear to my heart, the maintenance and improvement of trails and parklands in Arlington, and it also includes two specific targets. One is Tuckahoe, and I forget what the other one is. Parks benefit everyone. That's what we get our oxygen. Best thing I can say about parks.
All right. Thank you so much, Mr. Wind.
Thank you.
All right. And we'll go back to our agenda. And so that's it for new business. Our next meeting on October 20th, we'll have the school board, a school bond campaign brief presentation. We're going to have a COVID update from Dr. Varghese, who is the public health director for Arlington County. We'll have a report from the legislative committee, as well as a presentation from the R&E committee.
Highlands. Oops, I should have remembered Roslyn Highlands.
Sorry about that. Where am I? Okay. All right. So just to reiterate, the ballots will be going out after the meeting to the delegates, and there'll be two votes on the ballot. One of them is to approve membership for the NAACP chapter that was just presented, and the other one will be to approve the minutes from the June meeting. Those will go out shortly, and you will have until noon tomorrow to vote. This meeting is being recorded, and it's currently live on Facebook, and I'm not going to stop the live on Facebook portion. And we are well past time, actually not too far past time.
Old business?
Is there any old business? If anybody has any old business, either unmute yourself or just raise your hands in the participants window so we can see it. Nope. Any old business, Tina?
No.
Okay. Any other new business beyond the ones that I've mentioned? Okay. Do I have a motion to adjourn?
Yeah, move to adjourn.
Okay, I got that from Eric. Do I have a second?
Second.
Second.
Okay. All in favor of adjourning this meeting?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? All right. Well, thank you so much, everybody, for joining this evening. Thank you to everyone for all of your hard work. Thank you to Tina and Dennis for all your hard work in handling the registration, and Dennis for handling the constant contact. Thank you to Lois for organizing the candidates forum, and thank you for all of you all for staying with us this evening and for participating. As Michael Beer always tells me, democracy is not a spectator sport. So thank you, everybody.
Thanks, everyone.
Thank you so much, Alan, for good work.